The Breakfast Club.
Adam White is here right here and right now. He's not worried about the morning. He's worried about the moment. And he's the king of the moment. Whitey, good morning.
Good morning. What a spectacular morning it's going to be. This day 2 years ago, we were out at Flemington on a day very similar to this for Breakfast with the Stars.
There's 4 degrees this morning when I jumped in the car.
Yes.
Four.
But it's going to be 19 degrees and not a cloud in the sky for most of the day. So, beautiful day. What a perfect day to recognise the birthday of my wife, who, Emma, is 40 today.
Is she?
What a milestone.
Well, that's a
40.
Very impressive performance. Very, very impressive performance by Em to get to this point. Putting up with you and the three kids to survive this long is a great effort. Congratulations, Em. Happy birthday.
It is actually an inspiring effort.
And as a result, of course, you would have made her some level of meal.
Some level of meal.
Some level of meal. Something of nutritious value this morning to exhibit your love in your undying...
Expression of love.
Undying love. I'm sure you would have done that.
There is a week's worth of festivities kicking off today.
Oh, oh, that's over the top.
There's lots going on. There is lots going on. As soon as the restrictions somewhat eased, all of a sudden it was open slather. So away we go.
Right. Mm. Right. Where'd you get her?
No, we don't talk about that because she listens to the show, Emma.
Yeah, only listens to the podcast late at night, so she's already got it. By the time she listens to this.
Well, that's a good point, actually.
She only listens to this
podcast. No, she's actually been listening live.
Well, then what's going on? She subscribes to the podcast every day, and that's great business, and we encourage all our listeners to get to the podcast because you don't miss a thing. And Em's one of the great podcast downloaders for us here in The Breakfast Club. And she often chuckles in bed at night time.
At you.
At me. Probably laughing at me. Mm. Not with me, at me. And that's okay, Em. Happy birthday, Em. I hope the family look after you and you have an excellent day.
Yes. I think that it will be good. I'm quite confident, actually.
Under enormous pressure.
No, I'm not.
Actually. Well, no, I think
I'm
you are.
I'm very comfortable
you're
with
under
where
under enormous
at,
pressure to get today right.
We'll see. We'll see. How's this text? First day of fasting for me today, staying the 5-2 diet, thanks to my motivation.
Wowzers.
Good luck, Ben, with all of that. It's worthwhile, even though you don't like it.
Me?
Yeah.
No, I think it's good. It's just not sustainable for you. History suggests it's not sustainable.
Not much is sustainable for me.
I am all for a bit of a reset for you, but history would suggest... We ebb and flow around these parts when it comes to this sort of conversation.
Oh, we ebb and flow. It's me to a T, ebb and flow. Roller coaster of emotions.
goodness me. Well, good luck to you, Ben. Get through your 600 calories today and see how you go.
Significant day yesterday.
What happened yesterday?
I didn't touch on it last week, but I was very pointed as coach of the under-10s. and we had our first training session last night. And
first training session. So that's the same crew.
Well, that's controversial in itself.
What do you mean?
Well, because I think that there'd be clearly there's a sort of a magnetism towards my coaching.
That's where
they want to go.
But you're the talk of the town.
We have four under 10 teams, and there is a sort of a suggestion last night that we're going to blow it all up and sort of reconfigure the teams.
Oh,
so
mix and match.
Not too happy about that. I'd like to keep my same sort of group. But in all seriousness...
But don't you want to just be able to impart your wisdom to more so that they do fall in love and become the awesome cricketers that you were
making? I'm oscillating on that. I'm not sure.
Why keep it to such a small party?
I know.
When you can expand your greatness.
I know. I've thought about that. So last night, and I'm being serious for a moment, the joy on the kids' faces to be out with other kids playing sport on the big main ground at Warrandyte, there would have been 45 under 10 kids at least out there playing. None of them wanted to go home. They wanted to keep playing after the training had the scheduled finish. It was just great because they've been like caged lions for such a long period of time. And I know that some of them have been going back to school. A lot of them haven't even been back to school. At this point in time, a lot go back today, sort of in that sort of grade 2, grade 3, grade 4 range. But it was just great to see them with smiles on their faces playing sport again.
That's a nice thing.
It was. It was really good.
Although, this is going to be a dilemma for you. Because you're going to be torn about how you get access to all these kids to impart your wisdom and greatness.
I know.
Think this is an issue. I think this is going to affect our show.
Well, when it was announced in front of the group that I was back coaching this year, just the reaction, there was fist pumps and there was all sorts of things. And the other coaches didn't get that.
Didn't get that.
No. I feel I'm driving a wedge between the other coaches.
Well, that's why they have to split them up.
That's right.
That's why we have to be split up.
Then the parents get involved and it becomes a real tussle.
We need our son, our child coached by Adam. Adam needs to coach our child.
Can
we get into Adam's team?
I didn't realise how political that all gets.
Under tents.
Oh.
Jeez. No thanks.
You can leave now, in all seriousness, it is a significant morning out at Flemington this morning because, as I said before, we were there 2 years ago. A lot of the horses are having their last serious piece of work on the course proper. Getting ready for the 4 days of fabulous Flemington, and there's going to be crowds all 4 days. It's
no crowds today though.
No,
it's back in the egg rolls.
No, but it's just coming together just in time for Neil Wilson and the crew out at Flemington, and I think it's great that it sort of signifies the beginning of the end or the start of the new in Melbourne with what we can and cannot do. I mean, a lot of talk has been about things opening up and Freedom Day last Friday. But the reality is really it's this Friday that's the Freedom Day, I think. I mean, you can go and see your family and have people over to your house over the weekend, but shops opening up and things sort of, I think, getting back to a little bit more of normality from Friday is when we can start to really, really celebrate, I guess.
I'm not into big days, named days, like Freedom Day, because we're going to have, it's already happened, so you can't have another one.
No.
So they tell us
Farnham Day last Friday, or it can be George Michael Day this Friday.
Two different versions of freedom. Any other freedom versions?
Well, there probably is. They're the two that come to mind.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think on the spot. I can't think of too many others. Speaking of cricket, by the way, did you see last night the World Cup game? You would have been watching the T20 World Cup game.
It was a big day big night for Afghanistan. They absolutely belted Scotland.
4 for 190, our Afghan friends into bat first after a lot of 20 overs. That's good. We like that. Who's their gun?
Oh, they got a few.
Well, no one really.
Their bowling's more they're where their guns are.
Zazai, sounds like a bloke from the Queensland State of Origin team. 44 he made. Ramanullah Gurbaz was 46 off 37 and Najbullah Zadran, 59 off 34. He was the destroyer in the middle order. Scotland, in reply, got off to a really good start. So they were chasing 190. So what's that? 8.5 and over. Is that right?
Yep.
No, 9.5 and over. 9.5 and over. That's a lot. So they were, after 3.2 overs, they were none for 28. 3.1 overs, they were none for 28, sorry. After 3.2, they were 1 for 28. 3.3, they were 2 for 28. 3.6, they were 3 for 28. 4.3, they were 4 for 30. And 5.3, they were 5 for 36. Oh, 6 for 38. All out for 60. Fair to say there was a collapse.
Yes.
From our friends, the Scots.
And the two that did the damage are familiar to us here who enjoy the Big Bash. Mujib took 5 for 20. And Rashid Khan took 4 for 9. So between them, they've taken 9 for 29.
It's not bad.
The mystery spinners. They did the damage.
That's not bad. Well done to them. Famous victory by the Afghans last night, and poor old Scotland left to lick their wounds in the world of T20 cricket. Mm. The question off this mess wants to know what's on the menu for Em's birthday today.
Well, she chooses.
Oh, of course. It's of not course, my that's choice family today. Tradition.
So you lobby and you try and put pressure on to try and get the meal you want. Em, interesting tonight, she's going with Japanese.
Well, that means you'll be having a separate meal by yourself.
She's making spaghetti bolognese for those that don't want the Japanese.
She's making. Did I just hear that right?
Yeah. So.
What? What? You making it?
I'm busy.
What are you doing?
Put things on.
Spaghetti bolognese. Come on, man.
Well, she's...
She's 40.
Yeah.
It's a special one.
Yeah, so there's...
Make her dinner.
There's those that don't like Japanese, so she's putting on some Italian for others. So she's no, but she's going out for brunch with some of her friends,
is
I
she?
Think.
Oh, that's good business.
I asked her if she wanted to have lunch with me today for her birthday. She said, nah, it's okay. I'll be too full from brunch.
Well, if she's going out for brunch, she doesn't need lunch. That's right.
Yeah.
Particularly given the fact she's going to have to cook dinner for everyone else when she's having Japanese.
Well, she's got the whole afternoon to get
ready. She'll be busy.
So, yes, Japanese. And there might be a couple of other things throughout the course of the week. So right. That's good. I think her best present today is the fact that all three kids will be out of the house. First day back for us where the kids will all be at school.
Oh, all three
dinner.
Gone. Yeah. Oh, that's a good result. That's a magnificent result, in fact. Yes, my little man's back to school first day today for a little while.
Got to wear the mask and all that sort of stuff. For grade three, it's got to wear a mask.
Don't all kids have to wear a mask?
No, not under grade three. I think prep to two, it's optional, I think.
Right.
He's the type of cricketer you need against Australia as well. Someone to stand up against them, someone to look them in the face and take them on. He's that type of cricketer. You know, you think of Botham, you think of Peterson. They like to, you know, go after people that sort of back away and back down. Stokes definitely won't do that.
And that was Nasser Hussain on the news yesterday, late last night, our time, that Ben Stokes has been added to the Ashes squad for England. That is very, very exciting news. And I like the way he described him. He's the guy that's going to take it to the Australians. And that's exactly the way he goes about it. I wonder what Angus Fraser thinks about this former English cricketer and International Cricketer of the Year, if you don't mind, in 1996, who joins us on the line. Angus, welcome back to the program.
Nice to be on board. Good morning, everyone.
Lovely to have you with us. This is big news for us. I imagine it's even bigger over there from an English cricket perspective. They have Ben Stokes accessible and available for this series. Were you confident that this would be the outcome?
No, not really. When the Ashes squad was announced a couple of weeks ago, I mean, you feared because, say, we mentioned earlier, you never know how long it's going to take someone. But I don't know. I was just flicking through my phone this morning and suddenly saw Ben Stokes available for Australia. It's great news for England. It's great news for the series. Pleased that he's healthy and ready to start playing cricket again because he is a box office cricketer, isn't he? I mean, the cricketers like him come along very rarely. And when they do, you want them to be out there entertaining and as often as they can.
I think that's a good term that you use, box office, and he absolutely is. And it doesn't really matter what form of the game he's playing. He is that excitement machine. He is going to take the game on. He's going to be aggressive. He's going to make things happen, which few cricketers possess to his level. And without him, the series might have been a touch lackluster, particularly from an English perspective in that regard. He changes the dynamic significantly, doesn't he?
Well, he does in a way that I suppose if England weren't a performer's well as we would like them to over there. There's always excuses, aren't there? And we hadn't had Stokes, we didn't have Archer, and these sort of things start to come out. And you don't want to be looking back on series of cricket like that. You want to look back as on them when the best to play the best and the better outfit have come out on top. So the fact that he's there obviously improves England's chances. It does add some real sort of gold, sprinkle some gold dust over the series. And hopefully he'll manage to play... perform either with a bat or a bowl on a couple of occasions that light it up. I mean, there is a bit of a challenge for him. I mean, he's not played a lot of cricket in the last 3 or 4 months. There isn't a great deal of warm-up cricket. So whilst it's brilliant news him being there, we all just assume he's going to rock up at the Gabba for the first test match and be in prime form. Quite a bit's got to take place before that can happen.
I think Nasser kind of hit the nail on the head, Angus, about just what he brings to the table. It's not just his wickets and his runs. It's that aggression and it's that almost that ability to intimidate, but also not to be intimidated, which I think can have potential rub off on the other players.
Absolutely, and I suppose when I was in England first, you're in a room. There's a door and there's something taking place the other side of the door. And everybody wants to open the door, but who's brave enough to be the one that sort of opens it and goes through it? And Ben Stokes is that for character, isn't he? He's the one that's always going to lead there. Obviously, Joe Root had made his vice captain, and he plays an important role there. But he is that sort of cricketer that he's not going to sort of walk away from a challenge. He's going to meet the opposition face on, exchange blows toe-to-toe. And all right, and again, one of the joys of him is the fact that if it doesn't work out, he takes it and he comes back again. He's not someone who sort of sulk and mope around and feels sorry for himself. He loves these big occasions, and obviously there's nothing bigger than the Ashes series.
Russell Milton is very real. Very, very real. And he loves Keith Urban more than anyone, I reckon. He's our English Premier League correspondent. In fact, just global game correspondent for us here in the Breakfast Club. He's back again. Russ, welcome back.
Hi, boys. How are you?
Going well. Keith Urban, yay or nay?
Keith Urban, yay.
you sounded like you needed some convincing, Russ.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, no, he's all right. I couldn't believe Jacqueline Smith is 76.
Yeah, well, there you go.
Big fan of Jacqueline back in the days with Charlie's Angels, yeah.
Well, I reckon you wouldn't have been the only one there, Russ. It might have been.
This is going to ask you, Russ. Back in the day, you were a fan. Why not so much now?
Well, yeah, still a fan now. Yeah, still a fan now.
It's probably been a while since you've been on.
All equivalent.
Been on Russ's radar for a while, but happy birthday to Jacqueline Smith today for the original Charlie's Angels. Hey, Russ. Now we love Keith Urban and we love Jack, but do we love Ollie? Is Ollie going to keep his job?
Well. Yeah, that is a lot of conjecture about that today and yesterday. Is, you know, the aftermath of that humiliation, wasn't it? It was quite a capitulation for Man United, and Liverpool were outstanding. They've been outstanding for a while now, and I think they come across a United team that were somewhat dispirited, lacked organisation, probably the wrong game plan as well at times. And, you know, they were clinical. Liverpool, absolutely fantastic. 4-0 up at half-time. Thousands of United fans leaving the ground. And things went from bad to worse, with Pogba getting sent off second half down to 10 men. It could have been 7 or 8 quite easily, but I think Liverpool took their foot off the gas a little bit and just toyed with United, really, which was quite sad to see for a Man United team at home to lose 5. I think that's only the 10th time in their career that they've in Man United's history that you know they've lost by 5. So things are pretty desperate at the minute down at Old Trafford.
Yeah, well, the scenes after the game were interesting, but I did see a couple of clips yesterday at post game, Russ, that Ollie was out in the car park and signing autographs and wasn't getting too much abuse at all. In fact, nothing but support, which I found a bit unusual, I must admit, considering the conversation and the level of intensity and emotion in it in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, they were really good, actually, United fans. Those that stayed, they played Atalanta in the week and they won 3-2. They were 2-0 down at half-time, United, and they were booed off. And they came back and played really well second half when Ronaldo scored the winner. Then, you know, 24 hours ago, they were 4-0 down, loads left at half-time. But those that stayed were really good. They were singing second half. And, you know, you could see them, you know, singing and chanting and all that. But I think United fans generally, what they won't go for the manager. I think they will stick by him. It's just been a thing that's happened at United over the years that they don't go for the manager. They will wait for the hierarchy to do their thing. Obviously, things aren't right. I'm sure there'll be talks amongst the hierarchy there as where they go with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer in the imminent future. If you look at their next games, they've got Tottenham away, Chelsea and Man City, or Man City and Chelsea coming up, and a tough one in the Champions League again. So the fixtures aren't getting any easier for him. He certainly, you know, I mean, his coaching staff certainly got to get around the players this week and try and sort things out, come up with some sort of plan that will help them and aid the team. And, you know, it's for a team like United in seventh on the way down, it probably is the lowest they could be. I'm sure they'll pick up, but whether it'll be in the next 3 or 4 games, I'm not sure.
Have they got anyone, or is anyone being spoken about as a possible replacement if they were to make the move? I mean, obviously it's a lot more complicated because Ollie's a kind of like a favourite son, but usually there's someone linked when there's a manager under pressure or a team is underperforming like Manchester United is at the moment.
Yeah, I haven't said anything. I haven't said anything. Normally you'll get 2 or 3 people that are linked with it. I haven't said anything at all across the media, so... You know, I mean, Gary Neville, who's obviously a, you know, United legend and he's big on Sky Sports over here, he thinks United will stick with Ole Gunnar till the end of the season, whatever. And he thinks they will have learnt from the past that, you know, getting rid of managers mid-season isn't the done thing, which is what they've done with the last 3, you know, prior to after Alex Ferguson. So, you know, I'm not sure they will get rid of him myself either. I think they'll see it out. They've They spent quite heavily on, you know, with some players in the summer. Obviously brought Ronaldo in as well. So it's about them, the staff that are there now, trying to find a way that United will succeed. You know, they traditionally over with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, they've been a defensive team that sat back and counter-attacked. Whereas against Liverpool, they went after them, and which was a really bad move because Liverpool just picked them off, and it could have been 5, 6, and 7. But no one has at the minute has come up on my radar that could be a successor to him.
My goodness, he's handsome. And when he's had a haircut after 18 months worth of no haircuts, it's just something special when he walks in the door. James, good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. Yeah, 2 weeks, as they say.
Give it 2 weeks?
Give it between a good haircut and a bad haircut. Might have gone a touch on the shorter side. It was no faith in that we weren't going back into lockdowns ever again.
Oh, so. You're planning on another one?
Yeah, Jim. You can't plan on anything at the moment. But yeah, went a little bit short, and you can see all the scars on the side of my head.
It's good.
How long did you have to wait? Or was it a booking situation, or did you just turn up? What was the scenario?
No, I get my mate to cut my hair, so then I rang him about 2 weeks ago and I said, oh, I'm starting to resemble a Lego man with click on hair. I said, can you fix it?
Can you fix it? Yes, we can.
Bob the Builder style. So as we knew, like 4 or 5 days out, he goes, I come in before I open up and sort of got the ears lowered.
Very nice.
Which actually, gentlemen, it got me thinking that as we leave our statewide sentence and we've gone from solitary to the prison yard to... Yes. Oh, United front as Victoria this Friday. It got me thinking, it's right up, it's right in your wheelhouse, as they love to say, Whitey. We all have to admit that sometimes we go, what are we going to do this weekend? Or what are we doing on my day off? And we go, you know what I want to do? I want to drive somewhere to get a particular food item.
Aha. Well, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to turn my microphone off and just go for a walk for 20 minutes because yeah. This is real Adam White territory.
I knew I was playing into it. I knew it's... the beautiful M. White's birthday, and you know, Whitey be thinking, what's for dinner and things like that. So he's in the right headspace. So happy birthday to your beautiful wife, Whitey.
Thank you.
But I was thinking, you know, like, I want to get out to regional Victoria. All my family's in regional Victoria, and it often means a little detour.
Yes.
So, like, near where my mum lives, she's not far from a place just outside Geelong called Freshwater Creek, and they've got a famous little bakery that's been sort of rolling along there, and they do day-old sponge cake. Which is
day old.
Yeah, so you can, it's, you know, it sits a little bit and all the flavours marinate.
Right.
I'm not sure you describe sponge cake as marinating. Yes. But
we know what you mean.
But I always make sure mum goes, you're 10 minutes later, sorry, I had to swing past Freshwater Creek Bakery and get myself a custard tart.
You and I have been there together and shared. I spent $74 there that day.
Sorry?
I did.
What did you buy?
Well, I ate a lot while I was there and then decided that I would take a lot home.
See, this is what I'm talking about. There'd be a lot of people...
$74.50.
This is what I'm talking about.
My goodness.
A lot of people, I reckon, will get up to the Beechworth Bakery next weekend, which is very famous for its pies and all sorts of pastries.
Yes.
That's become a bit of a franchise because yeah, there's one of those at Healesville.
Yeah, there has. Spent a lot of time as a kid, a lot of family from Beechworth, so always go to the Beechworth Bakery. Dennis Sorrento for the vanilla slice.
Well, yes, the world famous vanilla slice, Main Street there in Sorrento.
Some have walked there to get a vanilla slice. Yeah,
so, Name names. So is there any place, like, we all seem to have family, you know, spread out across the state and things like that, but we go, on the way, we've got to stop here.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you've got the guru over there. I mean, he's the connoisseur of this sort of stuff.
We need Mick Sharkey's involvement in this sort of activity because he's the pie man.
He just gets pies everywhere. Where did we go? When we
went to Bridgewater.
Where did we go? Bridgewater.
Mm.
Right. Very that was good.
Very famous place. That was on the way back from Swan Hill.
I'm like, it was too. Yep. Right.
And we stopped off there. I was having, it was a terribly difficult drive because I just was driving along knowing that we were sort of hour away, 50 minutes away, and just see these massive vanilla slices just in the windscreen.
Just
like a mirage. You just knew it wasn't far away.
A vanilla slice mirage.
I know there's a
just
man
like
in...
driving through just the vanilla.
I know there's a man in here who loves the Ngambi Bakery for not only its food, but its optics, to borrow an AFL term.
Yes, yeah. Yes. Yeah, it's all about optics for our man.
Is there? We've never really been road trippers, my family, all the way through, I must admit.
Well, you're actually...
But now I've got family all over the place, it might become part of the part of the journey.
What about your old stomping ground? You're a Greensboro man?
Yeah, yeah, well, there wasn't too much. When I was growing up, it was Macca's and it was...
Macca's?
Well, that's all there was, the Greensboro Macca's.
There had to be a bakery. Every town has a bakery.
Well, no, it's not a town, it's a suburb, it's different.
Even a suburb has a bakery.
It probably does in the shopping centre. But you don't go in there to buy your bread. I don't know, where we got our stuff from?
Well, one different from a bakery is that I actually always used to introduce my new teammates from Geelong, and where I grew up in Geelong, there's the Minerva Road Fish and Chip Shop. And they're still the same guys who've been working there since I was a little boy. And
Where's Minerva Road?
It's technically it's in Herne Hill, but it's just near Bell Park Football Ground.
Oh, yes.
They were one of the classic fish and chip shops that put the teams on the...
Oh, really?
Yeah, on the front.
And yeah, nice.
Nick and Tony Sapina, amazing ability to actually remember every single person's name. So now you've got generations coming back through. They remember the family and the kids and the next generation.
That's a gift.
What's that place opposite the footy ground where you get the amazing...
Ripper Roast.
Ripper Roast.
Ripper Roast. Ripper Roast. Ripper Roast, the meal I like most at Ripper Roast.
Don't tell me there's a TV ad.
No, we made our own every time we walk over the road from footy training.
Whenever we went down there for Saturday night or Friday night games, the first quarter was always very difficult because I'd eaten so much. Then to call it was just... It wasn't until about halfway through the second quarter you felt comfortable in your seat because you'd eaten so much.
You weren't calling with an inflated ego. You were calling with inflated bread.
Abdomen. Was it only you engaging to that level, or did you have other members of the
commentary
team?
To that level, yes. Wow. I had a boundary rider that... got involved in that sort of activity, but then, and then it would be KFC on the way home. Well, it's a long drive back to Melbourne.
It's not that long.
I've had 15 kilos of Ripper Roast.
I have said this story before, and this is absolute fact. Is that
he's waving
when
his finger?
When he waves a finger,
when
he's
you
serious.
Would drive back to Melbourne, the visiting team to Geelong on a Saturday night, whoever it was. A lot of the players were queuing up in the drive-through.
How do you know that?
Because I saw them.
Because you were queuing up in the drive-through.
Yeah, I was there as well. No, because there were that many of the footballers that were sort of trying to get in. You'd actually park your car and go in the venue because you'd get it quicker. when you see the car, that happens all the time. You see the car line up at the drive-thru and you have to make a calculated decision.
Do
I stay in the car and wait, or do I get it 10 minutes quicker by going in there? There's an element of trust as well. You feel like you're definitely going to get your order.
Yeah,
you've ordered if you actually go in and face-to-face combat.
Well, it depends.
Combat.
You've got to be aware of what's in the car, is my theory. Like, if it's a one-man band, just a solo driver, no dramas, just tuck in behind that. But if you've got family, activity in the drive-through gym, that's when we have troubles.
Look, I'll defend our man because it was the same in reverse whenever we played in Melbourne. You'd actually see teammates' cars first. If they didn't pull off at Laverton Macca's, you'd pick them up at Brobat and like North Shore coming on the way in. And then there was like this last chance saloon. They're probably just heading off to Geelong West. And then there might be the odd person who'd be the Kadinia Cafe, which is a 24-hour number like near the footy club. So you grot.
Well, after a long day on the tools, Jim, you just need some sustenance, some nutrition.
Yeah, yeah.
Not a lot of nutrition, of course. Off the SMS, old school boys, we always stopped at the Golden Fleece Truck Stop Petrol Station, Bairnsdale, for breakfast on the way to Marimbula for family holidays. Best bacon and eggs ever in the Leyland P76. Says the Prez.
So, from him. In my first year at the club, I was doing some study at Ballarat Uni and used to have to make the drive up sort of once a week. And the Meredith Bakery. I wasn't even hungry, but I just, every time I go, I have to stop and just get
something. So, what did you get?
I was always like a farmer's union, wash it down with a custard tart or something like
Farmer's union.
Which was my pre-game meal, actually.
A terrific drink, a terrific beverage.
Jimmy's giving me confidence that athletes can eat that food.
I was a dietitian's nightmare. I actually ended up having a discussion with a dietitian. She said, it's not good for my job seeing you walk around with the farmer's union before each game. I said, look, I think the game is above the shoulders and it makes me feel good. I said, it's a bit late now to actually refine my habits. We're at game day. So you're sort of running with me for the next 2 hours.
Yeah.
It's too late by then anyway. Yeah, it's too late.
Yeah, you should have delisted me in November.
Yeah, that's right.
And we're in June and it's about 6 degrees in the hailing here at Geelong.
That's right.
The horse has already bolted. So we came to a negotiation that she went and found probably the least sugary iced coffee number, and I got to trial them for a week. And we
what was it? Because I'm an iced coffee man.
Yeah, Farmers Union Zero.
Yeah.
Well, Dare Raw. So Dare had the raw, which was a low sugar sort of number. And I said, I can negotiate with that.
I can try that for you.
But what I do after, whenever we land in any state, my first job was to go, every state would have their own branded sort of iced coffee. Clearly, like Farmers Union, South Australia. Yeah. It was like Paul's and Brown's in different states. And I'd go, and I'd immediately head to the local like sort of convenience store near the near where we're staying, and I'd pick up 4 or 5 iced coffees because I think
check them in the fridge.
Yeah, check and clear out the bar fridge, and I'd think I'll have one, then I'll have one in the morning, and then because you know we play a night game interstate, I'll have one on the way to the ground, and okay, damn, when I need another one. The next morning when you're really tired and you're flying back home.
That's preparation.
Why don't you just get a 2-litre version?
No, because you've got to take it to the ground and the bus.
Yeah,
rookie over
you
there.
Didn't take that. Well, no, hang on, don't call me rookie. you get your 2-litre and you just drink the top out of it and then you put ice in it and shake it.
But you still got to carry it to the ground.
Yeah, and then on planes.
Just have a secondary vessel.
So you're carrying 2 vessels rather than a separate little package.
Putting your drink package. You're having water and just putting your drink bottle.
Right. Iced coffee, man. Where is the best pie, by the way? Is Mick Sharkey listening? Let us know, Mick. Give us a call.
What was the one here that came through? Parker's Pies in Rutherglen. Craig Davis knows this, our producer here. We talk about this often because we drive to Tokenwall to play golf.
Right.
And you stop at Strathmerton. Very good bakery set up there.
See what I mean? Like, whenever you travel, part of your thinking is, your first thought, where am I getting to first to get the food before I get to my stop?
Unfortunately, Strathmerton is so far from Melbourne, it's almost like a waste because you're virtually at Tokenwall. You need something. So you sort of break it up into thirds, so you go twice. So you go somewhere else, and then you go to Strathmerton.
As Krasa says off the SMS, you may want to stop the podcast right now, Emma.
Is that that thing when you're driving into a car and you're wanting to make territory? You're like, when you're passing cars, you're driving to the speed limit. Yeah, of course.
Of course.
You maybe I'm going to get there a bit faster than them. So I've got them covered.
So you've got time.
But then you find yourself stopping and then you see all those cars you passed start going past you again just because you wanted to get something to eat. You've wasted your good driving.
But don't you do that with it when you pack the world champ, the bus, and your beautiful daughter all go on a road trip? You plan it out with.
No, we don't do that. We don't. Well, we don't road trip enough, which is something we need to fix. But we just get there. I'm a get there sort of guy.
Get them in.
Yeah, I'm a get them in. Just right out where we're going, I'll get you there. What happens in between is up to you, but I'm getting there first.
Holmes Pies in Colac. There's a picture of Jimmy on the back wall.
Oh, really?
Is there?
Am I eating a pie?
Country Cob Bakery in Kyneton has great pies. It does.
I've been there. That's a very, very astute observation.
Places in Kyneton.
Kyneton's good.
There's a nice feed in Camperdown because we always used to play the Falcons practice matches down there. You'd call into Camperdown.
Yes, Camperdown's a nice spot too. The best pies in Tassie are the Exeter Bakery off the SMS. And Gaffney's Pie Kitchen at Seymour has the best pies I've ever had, says Ian. Off the SMS, so there you go.
Is it the pastry or is it the filling that is raises?
What's the temperature?
It's called an ensemble.
It's
a collection of things that go into it.
The temperature is the key to the whole thing, let's be honest.
The MCG pie, it's either burns your tongue off or it's stone cold.
Or it's stone cold, yeah. We're getting ready for Melbourne Cup Week. Kicks off on Saturday with Derby Day, the first of the 4 major days at headquarters for a fantastic 8 days of racing, and the team at Godolphin, I'm sure, are setting themselves up for a full-on assault at Flemington for the Melbourne Cup Carnival. Vin Cox is the CEO of Godolphin. He joins us on the Breakfast Club this morning. Good morning, Vin.
Hey, good morning, guys. How are you going?
We're going very well, thank you, sir. Appreciate your time. And I'm sure what's a very, very busy week for the team, but can I ask you, let's take you back a couple of days. Are you over it yet?
Oh, look, there's only one place to win a race, and that's on the winning post, so... We weren't first past the post and didn't win it in the stewards room, but you know, we move on. We're very fortunate. We've got an exceptional colt, and you know, he's going to win a lot more races for us, we hope, into the future, and we look forward to getting back on track.
He's obviously, we're talking about Animo, of course, who was the Caulfield Guineas winner and just missed out in the Cox Plate on Saturday. Is there a number that sort of that he missed out on in terms of a worth, as a value as a stallion on the back of that performance or that outcome?
I don't know. He certainly wouldn't have lost any admirers. He was, you know, he really ran his heart out and just missed by, you know, millimetres, really. I think, you know he's worth, he's cemented in terms of, you know, his future as a stallion prospect for us at Darley. And it's just a matter of building on his resume. So I don't think he can quite quantify it, but we look forward to building on that CV in any case. So, we look forward to next season.
Vin, we talked to Joseph O'Brien yesterday morning, and he was saying that the longer it went, the more nervous he got after being quite confident initially. What about from the other side of things? Were you starting to get more confident the longer it went, or take us through that whole dramatic half hour after the race?
Well, it was obviously very it was high pressure and high drama and things. But you know, we straight after the race, Sean Keogh and myself spoke to Willow as he was weighing in, and he said he was going to protest. So obviously we protested, and we went into the room and everyone pleaded their case, and it was relatively quick, actually. And then we were asked to go outside while they deliberated, and the deliberations clearly went on for a long time. And experience tells you, the longer the deliberations go on, you tend to think it's going to get overturned. But, you know, we were never confident. But the stewards got a hard job to make, and the winner rightfully won the race, and we're now second place in a Cox Plate, which we're delighted with his run. So we're not complaining one bit.
No, he certainly ran well. So we want to talk to you about the Flemington Carnival and what you've got coming up, because you've got some decisions to make. But just one final one on Animo. What do you see him doing over the next 12 months? Is it too early to tell, or have you sort of got a feeling as to what you'll be targeting with, one of the most talented young horses in the country?
We'll spell him now. We'll look at Autumn Carnival, and the races like the Randwick Guineas, maybe the Doncaster, the Queen Elizabeth, things like that. So probably nothing on the radar in Melbourne, just the sort of brief chat we had about potentially what we might do with him next season. And then we'll just evaluate where he is at the end of that carnival, in the autumn carnival, and whether he races on or goes to stud or you know, the other possibilities. So, we look forward to getting him back in probably around February time.
You talk about that little chat you had about Animo's next phase of his career. There's a good little piece in the paper today about almost a little match committee that you set up at the start of the week with you and James and form analyst Dominic Byrne to plot the course for your runners any given week. And I imagine this week is a pretty important one for the stable. Take us into that discussion. We're some footy people, and we have match committee on Thursday night, and there's a bit of discussion about who plays which position and who comes into the team and who doesn't. And what's it like in that room when you're having the chat about how you're going to place the horses?
It's your analogy around a football team is very good, because that's exactly what it is. We're mapping out or coursing where we think we're going with each individual horse, not more the sort of key horses, the group horses, rather than midweek type horses. But it's exciting, you know, just which way we should step, which jockeys we should use, what the options are, how we build a profile, example, how we build a profile for a colt, what's going to give us the best opportunity to win that group one or stakes win, whether it's a mare and things like that. So, it's good fun. It's very, everyone has their bit to say, but one thing I will say is that once we make a decision, we don't go back on it. And it's, whether one of us might have a completely different view, we do make that decision and we get on with it and course that path.
Vin, I think you almost answered there for me, but does winning or losing make it change the plans more or less? So if Animo had won, would they have changed the plans, or is it when a horse loses, does it change your plans the most?
Oh, it changes your plans most when they're disappointing. you know, if they're beating a lip, as we were in the Cox Plate, no, it doesn't, not going to change where you're going. And you ultimately have, you have your, in your mind, pretty much, you know, your campaign mapped out. It might be 4 starts, 3 starts, 5 starts, whatever it might be. And generally, you stick to it. It's only when you get the real disappointment that you've got to zig when you've got to, when you probably wanted to zag. So that's when it, when you do change course. Yeah,
there's been a bit of discussion about the quality of the Australian horses, particularly weight for age horses, compared to the internationals. And you, no one's better placed than you to talk about this with international understanding as well. How would Animo compare to the 3-year-olds of Europe, do you reckon?
Oh, I think he'd be pretty competitive. Yeah, I think that those sort of comments are pretty insulting to owners of horses, whether it's in Australia or the world over, Joseph O'Brien's and things like that. That colt, you know, he won a Group 1 in America by a big space. And then, you know, he comes over here and wins a group, you know, wins a Cox Plate, no less, here. You know, they're good quality races. You don't do that by accident. You know, I think the only thing I'd suggest to you commentators is you need to race a few more horses because it's not that easy.
Well, trust me, I've raced plenty of them and they're no good, Vin. I'm looking for a good one, Vin.
So, I mean, I think really, I mean, if you look at that Cox Plate field, you've got a horse that's last up winner. The winner is the last up winner, Group 1 winner in America at Saratoga.
Yep.
Our bloke, the last up winner in the fastest Caulfield Guineas of all time, won that. The third horse is the reigning horse of the year, 9 times Group 1 winner. Mwanga, a Group 1 winner, one of the best 4-year-olds in the country. You've got Probabil, who ran 5th, last start Group 1 winner. You've got Corsair Mav, who twice Group 1 winner out of New Zealand. Cap Devant, the 3-year-old, 2nd in the Caulfield Guineas, Group 1 winner at 2. I don't see what you blokes are looking at. I think you're on drugs.
Glorious morning in Melbourne town. I hope it's a fantastic morning wherever you are. Wherever Darren Lehman is, I hope it's a fantastic morning. Former Australian coach and the fittest former Australian coach in the history of mankind. He joins us on The Breakfast Club. Good morning, Boof.
Morning, guys. And I don't think I'm the fittest of all time. I'll give you the strong tip.
But you're doing these marathon Ks, Boof. What are you doing at the moment?
Oh, I'm actually out walking near the Gabba. So it's a beautiful morning here in Brisbane. And, yeah, getting some Ks up for the my marathon, so it's been a challenging month. I've got to do 240 in the month, so you've got to get moving.
Yes.
It's been good, lads. Obviously, all in aid for heart research, for the Heart Foundation. So anyone wants to donate or join, go to mymarathon.com.au and join my team and donate and, you know, get some much-needed funds into heart research.
So how many Ks down are you? Well, you've only got a couple of days to go for October. You've got 240 to get through. You did 120 last year. You're doubling up, so you must be pretty deep into the campaign.
I am, mate. I'm 180 in. I've got 60 in 6 days, so 10 a day. So it's not too bad. But if you have one lazy day, Jimmy and boys, you know, you've got to catch up. So I'm trying to get ahead of the curve before the weekend, and obviously it's a race.
But, Boof, well done on the walk. Are you walking anywhere particular around the block? Are you walking, as we've been speaking this morning, to the local bakery to pick up a pie? If people wanted to come out and find you and have a chat, whereabouts are you walking to?
All over the shop, mate, actually. Yeah, I go from Wynnum to the Gabba, around the place, around the parks, and, you know, I've been to Bagara, which is near Bundaberg, walking. So all around Queensland, really, I've been doing the walk each and every day. You get up, get going, and get going in the morning, so make the day. And you feel better. That's the main thing, getting out and exercising. I think, you know, last year as a total for the Heart Foundation, everyone walked about 120,000 Ks. We're up to 240 this year. 1,000 Ks. So, you know, we as a group, everyone's getting out, getting healthy, and that's good to see.
Obviously, Darren, you've had your own health issues, which kind of shocked everybody, and I think including yourself. What changes have you had to make to your life as a result of the heart issue you had?
Well, not drink as much beer with Hartford and Bart. And trying to stay away from those two. You know, when I woke up, on my 50th birthday, I had the heart attack. You know, I was reaching for a cigarette, so they've had to go. The gases are gone, and modify my drinking, and, you know, better enjoy life and get out and get healthy. So it's been a big wake-up call, but it's been a good one.
Because you've always been someone that's done a lot of walking. I remember you as coach of the Australian team. You're always walking laps with your coaching staff or your players. So it's you've always been quite active.
Yeah, and that's what happens. It can be mine's a bit hereditary and then obviously lifestyle. So it can happen to the fittest person. And you know, we've seen people that have been really fit marathon runners, you know, all of a sudden just drop still dead straight on the street. So for me, it's a case of actually, if you've got any problems at all, get checked. Make sure you get checked by the heart specialist. And that's what happens sometimes. So obviously, a lot of people don't live the healthiest lifestyle. So this is just encouraging them to get out, get going and get moving.
And new grandchild over the weekend must make you very proud. But does that also mean that you're trying to pass the message onto your kids so they're nice and healthy?
Yeah, a bit of both, mate. Yeah, obviously proud for the whole family. I haven't seen our granddaughter yet, Roxy Lynette, but looking to see her in the next week or so when I get down to Adelaide from Brisbane and everything sort of starts to open up. So, yeah, really exciting time. And, yeah, that's right, making sure your family is all getting out there, getting healthy and looking after themselves.
So the big news overnight while you're walking, you're probably putting it through your head calculator, going, how does this impact the Ashes? Ben Stokes has been added to the squad for England, which is really exciting from our perspective. What difference does it make to the England's team from your eye?
Well, it gives them some belief and some muscle in the middle order. So it certainly improves their side and gives them a chance to maybe win a test match. I'm not saying they're going to win the Ashes because, you know, they haven't won a test match for two series now. So for them to really swap it around, they'd have to have an unbelievable series from Root and Stokes and the bowlers alike. So it's going to be an interesting series. It does give him a pump up, though, that's for sure. And he's a quality player. And he's performed well in Australia, so he knows the conditions and how Australia plays. So, and they haven't changed much of the bowling attack in Australia. So he knows all their bowlers back to front, as does Joe Root. Now, Joe Root is an interesting one for me. He's a superstar player, but if there's one blot against his name, he hasn't made 100 in Australia in two visits. So for him and for England to have a real chance, they really need him to score some big hundreds.
Well, he's been doing that all year, so if he's going to do it, this is probably the year he can do it, because his record this year is quite remarkable.
Yeah, it's unbelievable, isn't it? He's had a outstanding year in the home summer. But again, different pitches, different types of bowling you're facing, and he's a very good player. Don't get me wrong, he certainly can lead England very well. If he scores runs, it gives him enough time to bowl Australia out twice.
Yep.
And that's going to be the key. They're going to make enough runs where I think Australia's bowling is the edge in the whole series. I mean, they're going to have Cummins, Stark, Hazelwood, Lyon, and maybe Nessa type or someone like that that gives them some good depth to get 20 wickets.
Any further coaching roles for you coming up in the future as the world starts to open back up? Some T20s, some 10-10s, some 100 ball comps, some beach cricket, anything?
Yeah, I did the 100 major in England this year, so I went over there for 2 months and had the great 2 weeks quarantine on the way back. That was an exciting tournament. And then obviously the BBL, that gets moving in the next month or so. So it's a full summer. Looking forward to obviously the Ashes first and foremost and then the BBL and getting cracking with the heat.
What are you seeing from the T20 World Cup at this point in time from an Australian perspective firstly and then overall? Do you think Australia are in the mix? Have they got the artillery to match it with the likes of India and England and so forth?
Oh, yeah, T20 is that sort of format. I mean, everyone wrote Australia off. Have you boys backed Australia? You know, did you get on board or did you write them off as well?
Oh, we're on board. We just haven't backed them financially.
No. Well, that's probably a safe one anyway. Good call. The simple fact, I think Australia's bowling attack is as good as anyone going around, and that's their strength. So, you know, if they can get Warner and Finch firing, and then with Smith and Maxwell, they've got a top four that can actually score enough runs. So if they do that, I think they can win it. A lot of people have written them off, but the way they bowled and fielded the other day was exceptional. Now, of course, they didn't bat as well as they would like, but they won with 6 wickets to spare. You know, yes, they only got in with 2 balls to spare, but, you know, they won quite, you know, not comfortably, but they won easy. So, for me, I think they're just tracking on nicely and under the radar.
Boof, is it because we've seen some early scores in that tournament that it's almost a low-scoring T20 World Cup? That plays to Australia's strengths a bit more with Hazelwood instead of making it, one, you know, chasing 170, 180 to win, the scores are down around 130?
Yeah, it does, and that does help the bowling side and the fielding side. So, and if they squeeze well enough, which I'm sure they're well-planned, well-drilled, and they'll do the right thing. So I think that they're in a really good spot. The danger for them is if that person has to make a big total, for example, on a good wicket. But as you said, the wickets are low and slow, and I don't think they're going to be high scoring.
Really, really appreciative of the leadership group in here as well, and their understanding where this team is and where it needs to be. Because it has to be a part that you ask there, an acceptance from some of these established core players that maybe know that I deserve to get more minutes here, but also have them to buy in to understand, hey, you know what, we need these players with us to 23, so let's bring them on, even if it costs me some minutes in this game, because we need to do this together.
That is the voice of Tony Gustafsson, the coach of the Matildas, after the 3-1 victory on Saturday night against Brazil. 15-0 in the house to see the girls back at home soil for the first time in quite some time. And the result went our way. They play again tonight, and Channel 10 football host Tara Rushton's been good enough to join us to tell us more about it. Tara, good morning.
Good morning, gents. Thanks for having me on.
Not a problem. Great to have you on. Now, we were very impressed with what we saw on Saturday night, but there was a conversation post the game, Tara, that I was interested in from a couple of different commentators, saying that it was not a bad performance, but if we're going to be a team that wants to contend for a World Cup, we've got to be better again, particularly defensively. Is that the assessment from your crew at Channel 10?
Yeah, look, what's been really interesting is that, and I know you heard from Tony Gustafsson just earlier, is that under his tenure all this year, 13 games played, majority have been losses, unfortunately, leaked a whole lot of goals.
Yeah.
The defence at the back has been pretty brittle. And so, interesting, in Tony's camps, he's changed the language around defenders. He said, we're not defenders, we've got forwards, middles, backs. Sam Kerr is our first defender. We need to defend as a unit. He's tinkered with the formation, 4 at the back, 5 at the back. And what we did see on Saturday was the best performance, all-round performance under Tony. It was a cracking result. There were still a couple of moments, though, where we did get caught out. But, yes, playing at World Cups, you saw it at the Olympics, and we've got the Asian Cup in January. Just around the corner, it needs to be tightened up. You just cannot afford to have those momentarily brain lapses or get players completely pulled out of position. So, yes, there needs to be improvement when it comes to finding that combination that works at the back so that everyone knows what everyone else is doing. And then I think as well, it's not just defence, but there are a couple of moments. There's some super creative players on the pitch. Kyra Cooney-Cross, the young gun coming through, and Mary Fowler as well, the 18-year-old that scored in back-to-back international friendlies. A little bit more creativity. Instead of just whipping the ball into the box and hoping Sam's there, a couple of times she was, a couple of times she wasn't. Mm-hmm. So I think this is the process. This is where he has to get. And he knows he's got one eye on the Asian Cup in Jan and the other one is on 2023 in the Women's World Cup. But yes, because when you go against the best teams in the world, you don't have that margin for error. You just don't. So there has to be room for improvement. But yes, overall it was a fantastic performance, but this is what friendlies are for. He needs to tighten things up and also find the players that he wants to use and build the depth in those positions as well.
Tara, Daniel had a big smile on his face because you're talking defence and he's a coach and coaches love boring defence. And I like how you said, yes, they need to tighten up. But for me, the crowd starts jumping on top of their seats when they kick 3 goals. And as you mentioned, it wasn't Sam Kerr. It was exciting. It was young names. It was exciting. And it was creative.
Yeah, you're exactly right. I know it's kind of like kids' football, isn't it? It's like, don't lose your player. But we like to watch attacking football and that free-flowing attack where you've just got players bombing forward all the time. What was exciting, and it was a bit of an anomaly, is that Sam Kerr didn't get on the score sheet. You had the stalwart of the team, who's a defender, Claire Polkinghorne, score the first. Mary Fowler, who's just 18 years old, she's the face of the future in this team. It was her 5th goal and her 17th appearance. She was in this squad at 15. And then Emily Van Egmond, who came off the bench, having played around 15 minutes of football since the Olympics, which is great for her to get on the score sheet. Honestly, gents, the crowd being back 15,000 and the Brazilians were going absolutely bonkers. It was such a good atmosphere. I couldn't hear myself. It was goosebumps because, especially coming out of, and you guys would know in Melbourne, coming out of lockdown, live sport, finally back, people cheering, you know, the bongos, every type of instrument was out. It was just hard. If you're neutral, it was hard not to get really caught up in it. And it was just great to be back around people celebrating sport in a stadium. It was a bloody good feeling, to be honest.
Do you feel like a pie yet after our discussion?
I actually do.
There's been more that have come through too.
I actually do.
This is good for business.
The Country Bakery in Trentham after a game of golf at the beautiful Trentham.
I think if I was going to live in the country, I might live in Trentham.
Why is that?
It's a very pretty place.
Yeah, it's just looks like a nice place. I've never spent any time there.
Have you played golf at Trentham?
I have not. But Andrew Marr keeps telling me that it's sort of God's country sort of stuff.
Andrew Marr used to live in Blackwood, which is where we had a family retreat, like shack type situation.
Family retreat? What do you mean?
Well, I wouldn't call it a holiday house. It was more a...
Share house? Timeshare?
No. It was just a place that my grandparents used to have.
So it was like a house?
It was a house.
So that you went to, so like a holiday house?
Yeah, but you don't really... A holiday house I usually would associate with water or beach or...
No, that's not a holiday house. That's a beach house.
Yeah, that's true. Anyway,
holiday house is where you go for holidays.
Yeah. Gigi too should work for Airbnb or something like that. Oh my God, the descriptions would be incredible.
I'm just trying to help my brother out. He was a Blackwoodman.
Yeah,
and
it's a beautiful area.
Trentham Golfman.
Around Easter time, fantastic place.
Can I have another place?
Spud Country.
Can I have another sort of? I'll throw another little sort of cuisine instead of just thinking
pies.
Pies.
Well, I really do want a pie though.
Yeah. So, Beechworth and Ballarat, you get the old hardboard lollies, like some Ballarat, the raspberry drops, because coming from Sovereign Hill.
Humbugs.
The humbugs. You get an old tin of them.
A whole tin of them?
Yeah.
And they come
you
in
have
there,
to,
they
you
come
have to get a tin, don't you?
Oh, or the jar, or you get a tin of...
Yeah, the jar where you have the little spring-loaded thing that you got to try and get off in a...
Yeah, no, give me a tin. I want a tin.
What's that something rock?
Yeah.
Something rock.
Not candy rock, is it?
No, it's not, but it's something rock, and you get it, and you break your
teeth. Oh, yeah, I'm with you.
Shards.
They do a Castlemaine rock.
Yeah,
it's just,
like that, yeah. It might even be that.
Someone will let us know off the SMS what the official term is. If I could turn our attention to the world of Australian Rules football for a moment, Jim.
Football.
Your football club has decided that they will be filling their last list spot with a player that formerly was a West Coast Eagle, Jared Brando. Well, how does this all come about, Jim?
November 3rd, which is that's next week, isn't it?
It's next week. It is.
Yep. So November 3rd opens up the window for the listed free agents.
So he's committed to you.
Yep. Which is fantastic. 23. Don't want to get his age wrong. I think he's 22 years of age. Former number 13 pick. But where the connection comes from is he was a Giants Academy member and was clearly highly touted through his draft year. And a few big Melbourne clubs got the Suki Suki Lalas up, and that's when he was the player who the Giants lost that sort of area of their academy to take players out of. So he has a big connection with a number of players who have been on the Giants.
Did you just say the Melbourne clubs got Suki Suki Lala?
Yeah, they did. They got Suki Suki Lala because they said, well, that's a traditional football heartland. It's not a growth corridor, which
well,
is fair. But
they're just telling the truth, Jim.
Yeah, but
keep it real.
But the point of academies and things like that is the amount of players that go through there. Every now and then, you might get a good one, and so you don't want the situation where you can have an academy, do it good, but don't do it too good.
It's like saying the Giants here have the Diamond Valley, like nursery of champions.
I know what you're
in
doing.
The Diamond Valley. Champion producing areas and saying we'll have them as academy areas.
Or you could do down here where players have literally played football their whole entire life and they've got a second cousin's auntie who was born overseas, so they get a next gen academy sort of play, which happens a bit down here. But I'm glad they've straightened all that up. But back to Jared Brander.
Do you hate the AFL? Is that what you're saying? GWS board director Jimmy Bartel hates the AFL.
Back to Jared Brander. He has a lot of relationships. Because
the way we're heading, we're going back to pies.
He knows Harry Perryman. Little Shorty Daniels and a few others, so who played cricket and footy with. So he'd be a good player for the Giants, fits the age profile and all that sort of stuff.
Where are you going to play him, back or forward?
Both. And wing. He's a very versatile player, forward wing.
Perryman on one side of the ground and Brander on the other, because Perryman sort of does that, doesn't he?
Yeah, Perryman can go back a bit. He went back because of injuries, but you can release Lockie Whitfield back up onto the wing. So he needs some flexibility. I think our back line really came on exceptionally quick with injuries, and I think like Connor Iden, and I think the whole world got to see a guy who I've been telling you guys about, Sam Taylor, back there, Isaac Cummings, starting to come into that 50-60 game. So You know, you throw Lockie Ash, who now can go back and up on the wing. That's what you want, guys who can move around. We've seen that with the Bulldogs and even the D's, players who can play multiple positions.
How did Brand... I mean, Brand, it just amazes me that, you know, you kind of felt like he was... You trade him for a second or a third round draft pick, not get him as a delisted player. I mean, I can't quite work out how West Coast wouldn't have him in their best 25 players.
Well, I think at West Coast, if you're playing back, you're stuck behind Barras and McGovern. You're playing forward, it was Kennedy Darling. And then you've got the Oscar Allen situation. Is he forward, back, ruck, all that sort of stuff? They've clearly got Natanui. They've got other talls there as well. So there's one caught in the logjam.
Was interesting, Half, that West Coast was going to be seen as the team that might have to make some pretty significant changes to their list if they're to stay in contention.
Mm.
They didn't do it.
Well, that means they'll have to change the way they play.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question.
That has to be the outcome. Otherwise, they end up with what they've had last little while, and that hasn't been anywhere near the mark. So they will have to find another way to play, which I think they're capable of doing. I think they're a really good list, but they just haven't played anywhere near the caliber of football they should be playing.
Just avoid playing at Gidinia Park.
Well, yeah, now stay away.
They played there twice last year and lost by 1,000 both.
Yeah, no, that's a setback for them. They should try and avoid that. That's okay. They should only play at least one game there next year, Jim, not two.
I was being a little bit silly there, but what it does highlight, as you're saying, is the way they play. And Gidinia Park absolutely exposes that style of football, where what it does for Geelong, it franks the style of football they play, where you can squeeze the ground, you play that slow, methodical game style, you take a bit of territory, whereas the Eagles, who love to kick the footy, they're a high-kicking side, and they like to go across the ground. It's Darling coming up, or another, you know, Oscar Allen, who start at the 50, they lead to the logo, he turns, and then all of a sudden your 50's open to Kennedy or Cripps coming back through the forward line.
What have been your thoughts on what Steve Hocking has said, new boss of Geelong, about their age demographic, the way they go about it, those sorts of things? Do you expect a shake-up, or do you think they're too committed to make any changes going into next year with what they've got?
No, it was very smart what he said. I don't think he's actually committed to anything with the way he's spoken. He's probably had enough practice standing at the front of AFL House where you can say a lot without actually taking a position, which is good, and it's smart business. He deflects to the off-field stuff, the members and things like that. But, I just think he's just played it, you know, the first over of the Ashes. You let as many go through to the keeper and you pad one down a fine leg and get off the mark.
I must admit, I was a bit surprised reading the press yesterday that they won't be campaigning for a home final situation, considering the venue capacity lifts to about 40,000 people with the new stand and the new development down there. Well, the next stage of this ever-going new development at the Kardinia Park. I was surprised to see that they won't be campaigning for that, Jim Bob.
I sort of took that as he won't be campaigning and he'll allow other people to do the talking for him, which you can allow people who've been involved in the club heavily for the last 10, 15 years, and a couple of names in particular. I think they'll do the lobbying. But he publicly is a CEO, and I think he'll advise the other people involved in the day-to-day operations at Geelong. We're not going to be doing any lobbying. But that doesn't mean they won't.
Because you reckon Geelong fans, now with increased capacity and opportunity to be a part of that, would they be absolutely livid if they didn't push really hard from headquarters to try and get a home final, should they earn the right?
I didn't say they wouldn't push hard. I just don't think it's going to come out from an official capacity.
Yeah,
I was surprised, Half, by those comments, because whether it's a Giants, a Fremantle, a Port Adelaide, even, you know, if they earned the right to a home final or a seated above the team that they were playing, that would make sense if you've got a 40,000 seat capacity.
Yeah.
You know, it's much better. I think it's much easier building that case than if you've got 23,000.
The other thing I'd like to get your take on, Jim, being at executive level at Football Club Land, is the fixture. Simon Garlick, CEO of Fremantle, yesterday was quoted as saying that he has a vision of this 17-game home and away season, which is the less is more NFL-type principle as opposed to the Major League Baseball just keep playing until they break sort of thing. I must admit, I'm coming around to the 17-round thing more and more every year, every time I think about it. Now, I know there's a hit initially to broadcast situations and there's an agreement in place at this point in time, so we'll get through all that. But philosophically, from an equality perspective in terms of draw and club opportunities, do you think there is merit in long term to have a 17-game season? Do you think that's something that could come around?
Yeah, I'm not sure, Huff, because for a number of years, I've thought a 17-game season, like it's automatically an unequal and unfair competition to start with. And as soon as you try and make it fair, you're going to do your head in. Like,
yep.
Just accept it for what it is. And when you've got 18 teams and 22 games or 23 rounds, it's unfair.
Yep.
Like, it just always is. But I think there is a way that you can do it. I think if it's 17 games, you play each other once, and then, but you can still have the 22 weeks with buys, and then you, if you can add a couple of rounds where you have your blockbuster or your big premier games added to that. So that might mean, yeah, you might play a couple of teams twice, but each side lobbies which team they want to play twice for the financial gate takings.
And would that change every year, or is that a locked-in situation?
No, I think you could change and do things. But, yeah, I just think be open to the discussion and see what it looks like first. I'm not committed either way, but I've always thought along the NFL model that if I knew from a positive way of seeing a 17-game season, if I knew I was only going to see Geelong versus Hawthorne once every year, I'm getting to that.
Yeah, and I'm watching that.
And I'm watching that.
Yeah.
But if I know I'm going to see him Easter Monday, but then I might get him round 17, well, Easter Monday's cool, but like, maybe that's probably not the best example. But
I'll go when there's less people later in the year.
Yeah, no, I think that's a fair example.
Yeah, but let's say it's Essendon the Collingwood, right? And if I'm only going to see them once, and entirely likely Anzac Day, that's going to be sellout, or Essendon v Hawthorne. Yeah, it's probably a better example where it's not an official calendar game.
Yep.
There's two parts to it, Huff. There's the whole idea of playing some teams twice and some teams once, which is unfair in itself. But there's also the manipulating of the draw where in the first 5 or 6 weeks of the season, it is set up to try and be as even as possible. So you get a situation where you might have a Gold Coast at 4-2, or you might have a Geelong at 3-3 because they've had a tougher draw. It is manipulated to try and make it even in the first 5 to 6. So everyone's in the season. So there's that manipulation as well that takes place. It doesn't happen by accident that the draw is the way it is in the first part of the year. Then you get the mediocre part in the middle, and then it sort of crescendos a bit towards the end, the way the fixtures are manipulated, based on the results from the year before.
Yeah.
But until you get, I mean, even a 17-game season is not going to be fair because you're going to have, you know, play some teams away and some teams home. But if you then flip it the year after, it's the only way to do it, really.
I'm into it. I reckon there's more urgency in every game.
You can have buys through the season to flush it out to 20 games, 20 weeks or 21 weeks.
And it gets better when Team Tassie comes in.
My word, does. My word, Jim. And then Team Northern Territory.
Do you reckon that's the next spot?
I don't know, Jim. That was the best of The Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.